Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. And each week, this show will address issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you can all do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Well, today, my co-host is Mercedes Zamudio. And Mercedes is a licensed clinical social worker, a parent coach, speaker, best-selling author, and founder of the Diversity in Parenting Conference, which helps parents and children communicate with each other, manage emotional trauma, navigate social media and technology together en route to developing healthy parent-child relationships. And Mercedes is also the hashtag End Parent Shaming Movement. And she as well as coined the term shame-proof parenting and using both to bring awareness to ending parent shame. And you can read more about her parenting expertise at shameproofparenting.com. Mercedes, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, and it's great to have you back. I apologize, everybody, when we first started, we were getting a little feedback, but it seems like that's cleared up. Now, before we get into our topic today, share a little bit about what is the Diversity in Parenting Conference and why is a conference like this needed?
Yeah, sure. So the Diversity in Parenting Conference is a conference for mental health and parenting professionals with a focus on diversity, inclusion, and representation in the parenting world. And I think that if we're being really honest, this is needed because I think we don't have enough diversity and representation in mental health in general, and we definitely don't have it in the parenting world. And for parents to be able to look out and see professionals who look like them, who understand their cultural needs and their cultural traditions, I think it will just do a lot to help parents and families feel like their professionals understand them and they'll reach out for support a little bit more.
So is this geared in one towards one group or the other? In other words, who is it for? Is it more for the professionals that are working with parents in need or for parents or both?
It's for both, but a lot of the workshops are really for our professionals because I think it's so important for us to be mindful of the different ways we create families in today's world. Not every family is a heterosexual two-parent household, and we really have a lot of sessions and breakouts geared towards the different makeups of family systems as well as the different identities that are encompassed in these family systems.
Well, I certainly appreciate the fact that you're putting this together. Where can we get more information as far as to register or get involved in the conference?
You can get all the information at diversityandparentingconference.com.
Perfect. Well, I want to let you know that when When my producer, Jan, told me about who our guest was going to be today, I thought of you, because I just thought of someone. I thought, you know, okay, who would be a great co-host in this situation? And I thought, you know, when we're talking about love, we're talking about compassion, we're talking about kindness and wisdom. And I thought, well, let's see if we can get Mercedes to be the guest co-host with me. So thank you for making the time for this.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, I'll stop teasing it out there. I want everybody to know that I love the topic that we have today, because the topic is love on every breath. How much better does it get than that? And what it is it's the title of our guest's new book, and it's also an ancient Tibetan Buddhist meditation that combines breath, awareness, imagination, and an energetic transformation process. And that's what our guest writes. And she's been practicing Tonglen meditation for over 40 years and teaching it for over 30. And she further states that this meditation brings all these components together in a powerful way in order to open up our hearts, to reveal and cultivate our kindness, our love, compassion, and wisdom. So, and with us to talk about that is Lama Paldin Droma, and she is the author of Love at Every Breath, and the subcaption is Tonglen Meditation for Transforming Pain into Joy. Lama Paldin is a licensed psychotherapist, spiritual teacher, and a coach. She has studied Buddhism in the Himalayas with some of the most preeminent Tibetan masters of the 20th century. Now, following a traditional 3-year retreat, she was authorized to become one of the first Western lamas. She subsequently founded a Tibetan Buddhist teaching center in Fairfax, California. Lama Paldin, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, it has been my pleasure just as I've gathered more information and learned more about you and what it is that you've been doing, it certainly has been my pleasure, and I feel that I've grown just gaining that knowledge. Now, but before we discuss the book, you know, share with our listeners a little bit about your personal story and how you came to be a lama.
Yeah, and what a lama is, right?
Exactly.
So for the listeners, a lama is a Tibetan term that refers to a guru or a spiritual teacher, master. You know, there's different levels of realization of lamas. So it's like a rabbi, a roshi, a priest, you know, something like that. And, along those lines. And extensive meditation training. We were trained in hundreds of kinds of meditation in a 3-year, almost a 3.5-year cloistered retreat, which I did on top of a mountain in British Columbia on an island off of Vancouver. So there's a very extensive philosophical, theological, and meditation training that goes into the kind of seminary process for being a lama. And I came to all this. I actually loved the religion I was raised in, the Episcopal Church in the San Francisco Bay Area. But at a certain point, I looked around in the mid-late 60s in the community I grew up in. And I was fortunate to grow up in a really highly educated, affluent community of people that were quite successful in the world. So they had really accomplished the American dream, quote unquote. They had really top level university educations, top level jobs, beautiful homes, you know, marriages and kids. And I looked around and I saw that the parents, the, you know, adults were fighting with each other. A lot of my own parents and many, many, many of my friends' parents divorced. And there was just, although they had achieved the American dream, I saw so much unhappiness. And I looked at this around age 13 and 14, and I thought, something isn't adding up for me. I want to find another path that brings more true satisfaction, more true meaning and value into my life. And then that's how I got really seriously started on a spiritual seeking path. You know, I mean, I was mm-hmm. still very young at that point. But so I was looking for something below the surface that would really bring more depth and meaning.
Well,
and to other people's lives as well as my own.
Right. And you mentioned that you started to pick up on this in the 60s. And obviously that was a time for change, in our society. But as you said, it's also a time in which we started to see more divorce. I think we started to see more commercialism, so many other things. At this time, I think we're even more desperate to needing more love in our lives, needing more peace. So, you know, with our human family facing so many challenges right now, it seems like it's more important than ever that we find peace and sustenance in our hearts. So can you share with us a little bit how Love on Every Breath can help all of us find more peace in all of our lives?
Yes, and I totally, absolutely agree with you 100%. It's so important right now in these challenges facing us as human beings, as our human family, that we find ways to sustain ourselves and to encourage ourselves and to, as you mentioned, find peace and enhance loving kindness. So the Love on Every Breath, this book, basically breaks down in 8 steps the meditation that people can do to lead to these results that we're talking about. And you can do, actually, you know, traditionally you would sit down and do all those 8 steps together on the meditation cushion. And, you know, we do that, and that can be a shorter session in a kind of a on the spot, like a pith essence short version, or in the longer version. But you can also take one of the steps and just do that. And so each step is a powerful meditation in and of itself, and different people resonate more strongly, you know, with different parts, you know, different steps. And it's really good to, if you really want to get into this, to familiarize yourself. And I explain how to really do the meditation. I give examples and how you can both do it on the cushion, or you could do it in 30 seconds, you know, out in daily life, anywhere you are. You know, take one of the steps and just do it instantly to help bring peace, to help bring love to our hearts. So the basic idea of this whole meditation really is, how can we really open ourselves? Can we really open our passion? I was getting an echo. How can we open ourselves to have compassion and loving kindness for ourselves and for all of us, for each and every sentient being? And of course, it's easier to have loving kindness for those close to us, although we know, you know, family life is often, you know, can be stressful and tax our patience. And so these bring methods to help us further open our compassion and love, even in the midst of challenging circumstances, because it's based on the idea that the more we really open to the inherent love that is in us as part of who we truly are, then the happier we are, the better we feel, the better our relationships are, and we create a base for cooperation in the family, cooperation in our schools, our businesses, our spiritual, you know, our churches, synagogues, temples, etc., and really in our country, in our world at this time. And if we bring more peace to our own hearts and sustenance through the love, then, you know, everything starts working better in our lives. And I explain in the book too that I've even taught the most part of this meditation, the center of it, I've even taught to a 3-year-old, and she learned to do it. So anybody can really do it. And you also don't need to be Buddhist. There, I've adapted, as my guru in Tibet did, I've adapted the meditation, shown people how you can adapt it for being a Christian or a Jew or any other religion, or if you're an activist or not religious at all, there's ways to adapt this so that you can use it in a way that really suits you. Hello?
Yeah, Mercedes, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I was just listening, and I think that this is such a really amazing space. And I would love for you, because I'm really interested in this concept of what you share in the book that says you can crack open a hard shell of ego clinging. And as a therapist, I talk about that quite a bit. And so I would love for you to share what you mean by that in terms of the meditation and the work that you're doing with people in your line of work.
Okay. And
sure. I can't really hear Mercedes.
That's what I was going to say. But before you answer, Mercedes, if you're on a speakerphone, can you go ahead and pick up the handset? Because it seems like you've become distant. And we don't.
I can't actually hear what she's saying.
Okay. Yeah, that's. I was struggling to hear it as well.
Can you hear me better now?
Oh, this is much better.
That's much better.
Got it.
Okay.
Awesome.
So if you could repeat that question.
It's still a little fuzzy, but yeah. I think I got the gist of it about breaking the hard shell of ego clinging.
Yes, that's what I was talking about. Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, oftentimes we get really fixated on our ideas about things, and we get really fixated in our position, whether it's in the family or it's in our community or with friends or at work. You know, we think we really are right, and we have a lot of emotion sometimes behind it, and so we get stuck. And this is part of our, you know, ego fixation, or this shell, this hard shell of the ego that gets created where we're not open and flexible and able to, you know, look at different solutions or ideas or ways of looking at things. So really, when we do this meditation on really opening to our innate love and our innate compassion and really using the meditation to bring that forth into, you know, more center stage and get in touch with this part of ourself. That's a movement away from ego consciousness, away from these fixated ideas we have on things, into a more open place of being able to hear each other, being able to listen to our own still, quiet inner voice, and move out of the ego consciousness into a more open consciousness, into awareness itself, which has a lot of clarity and more objectivity in terms of being able to listen to different ideas, to see different possibilities, to interact with people, and where we're not fixated within this shell of I'm right and this is the way to do things. So as we open our heart, that ego consciousness shell breaks open, and we're much more available to be present with ourselves and each other in a way that is much more dynamic and creative and positive.
So
does that answer that for you?
Yes.
It really does, yes.
Yeah, and my thought is, what do you think that has taken us sort of in the wrong direction from the standpoint of, and I'm going to kind of lead it with, I mean, we now seem to have, you know, political agendas that are doing just the opposite in the sense of trying to manipulate and to steer people's thinking. And then social media, between major media, you know, everyone trying to sort of take aside and shift people's thought process, as opposed to, and what I recall, and even going back, because you mentioned the 60s and 70s, we seem to be more focused on trying to get to a place that is more of an inner peace, more of a, you know, how can I find out more about what's going on with me and then share that. And it seems like we're headed in a direction that's almost the polar opposite.
Yeah, you know, I think it really boils down to, are we here in this life, each of us, that we have to look at this and really see where we're at. Are we here in this life as a human being to have the best life we can, and also that we want the best life possible for all other human beings? Or are we here to exploit other human beings? Are we here to just for ourselves, for our own power, for our own greed? And are in that sense, we really don't care about other human beings. And I think this is a value judgment that we each really need to look at. Are we, you know, do we care about other human beings? Or are we just out for our own power and greed? So that's number one, because all the manipulation and
exploitation,
thank you, that goes on, you know, towards people, of people, is all based on ego clinging to power and greed. And the person that is doing that is thinking this is how they are going to become happy. They're going to become happy by being really powerful and really rich, or, you know, whatever it is. And this is actually mistaken thinking, but obviously a lot of people think like this. And from a Buddhist point of view, this is really very, very ignorant, because we don't ever really truly get happy by exploiting or hurting or damaging other people, you know, in order for us to become powerful and rich or greedy or whatever. And that is goes back to what we were just talking about. It's an ego consciousness position. I want everything for myself and, you know, forget, like, screw all the other people. But that really doesn't lead to happiness. We're all interconnected. You know, if I get to be super, super wealthy and powerful, but the whole world is at war and the air is unbreathable, and, you know, I mean, how am I really going to be that happy? Or am I going to be that happy when my kids have to go to school in armored vehicles because people are shooting at each other? You know, and I have this huge mansion, but my fence is electric and 15 feet tall, and I have to worry every time I go out. I mean, is this happiness? You know, unless we create a healthy, wholesome, and, you know, situation for all of us, it's not going to really lead to happiness. You know, and that, of course, is a long-term goal that we can't just accomplish so easily, but it goes back to what are our basic values.
I couldn't agree more.
Agreed, 100%.
So, taking those thoughts, and I just now want to kind of talk directly to the audience. When you're choosing to provide your ears or your eyes to something that is on television, on a form of media or something like that, think about what it is that they're, what message are they trying to get? What is the purpose of what they're telling you? And if you believe that it's exploitive, if you believe that it is divisive, turn it off, because this is the type of message that once the advertisers realize that you will give your eyes and your ears to a message like you just heard right now, once the advertisers know that, there'll be a shift. But until such time, the advertisers are not going to shift, and that's where the money is. And if the money doesn't go there, people are going to continue to watch these things that are out there that are promoting, division. It's promoting hate, or it's promoting some level of exploitation of other people that I believe that the most of us don't want to do. So in starting with this book, and I think also, Lama Paulden, I mean, if you are speaking in places, if people can find that, would they find it on your website, where they can tell other people to go to get this message?
Yes, lamapaulden.org. So LAMAPALDEN.org. And there's various resources there. And this interview will be posted there when it's finished too. So, and I think your point about, you know, the people that are trying to give this divisive message and the message of hatred, it's very famous in human history, divide and conquer, divide and manipulate. Once you get the populace, the general population divided, you can conquer and manipulate it much more easily. But the reality is, unless we cooperate today as human beings, we are not going to be able to solve our global challenges. We need to cooperate. And this is at every level. And that is our challenge now as human beings.
Oh, that's so beautifully said. And I know, and Mercedes, with what you're doing, parenting is also a huge part of this, because this is where we are making that first impact with the next generation. So what are your thoughts as to how this ties to what Lama Paulden is saying?
Well, I think one thing that just struck me that she just mentioned was talking about this idea of always being happy. And I think you also mentioned in your book this idea of this type of meditation that you teach really gets us in touch with our suffering. And I think that that's something that's so important to us, that we teach to our children and to the next generation, that we don't teach them just that meditation or self-care is all about positivity, but it's also, it gives us the space to build resilience when things aren't going right, when we are kind of suffering through things. And I think that actually helps us when it comes to managing what happens in the world. When I look at, you mentioned kind of gun violence, when I look at all of the people afflicted by that and the people who commit these crimes, there's so much suffering that people don't know how to deal with, that I think it gets kind of projected and spilled out into society. And so I hugely believe that every parent should be a part of this meditation that you're talking about, not just for themselves, but so that they can really bring this skill set to their child and to the next generation, so that there's not so much hate and suffering that people don't know how to manage, so much so that they spill it out into other people's lives.
I agree. And really, this loving kindness starts in the family is so, mm-hmm. so unbelievably key and important, because a lot of these people that go around doing these mass shootings, they have never experienced growing up in a loving, supportive family.
Yep.
And they're alienated and they're extremely distressed. I mean, how confused and ignorant is that to think you're going to find peace and happiness through shooting everybody up? So it's the modeling in the family of how, you know, we can be, we have different ideas and opinions, but we can discuss them. We can care about each other, love each other. We can create fellowship and joy in the family. And each person in the family is important and we listen to them. If these things are taught and modeled within the family, it becomes a whole basis for how to live cooperatively in a way that's fun and brings satisfaction and enhances joy and love, you know, right there from the get-go in the family. And I think your point too, Mercedes, like, you know, many times, you know, stiff upper lip, et cetera, we try to ignore suffering as human beings, but that doesn't really work. And if we can actually acknowledge our suffering and bring love to it, bring kindness to it, and that starts right at home inside ourselves and with our children and our families, and it extends out from there.
Agreed. Agreed.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, but we will be right back. And so for everybody out there, stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. My guest host today is Mercedes Salmudio, and she is heading up the Diversity in Parenting Conference. And our guest is Lama Paul Dendroma, and we are talking about her new book, Love on Every Breath. Lama Paul, we have listener questions that come in, and for those that send them, I want you to know we truly appreciate it. And this one reads, I recall an article you wrote in the Buddhist magazine Lion Roar last year. I looked it up as something you said very much impacted my personal practice. You spoke about radical imaging in our meditations to connect our hearts and minds to all sentient beings. Yes.
That's what Buddhists always say, that sentient beings, yeah.
Sentient beings, it says, on earth and throughout the universe. Is this in your book? And if so, can you speak about how it applies to the Love on Every Breath meditation? And this is from Victoria in Minnesota.
Yes. So this idea that we're all interconnected and that we're not actually separate, we're unique and individual, and this is the magic and mystery of our human condition, that we're both completely, you know, individual and unique and have our own consciousness, and at the same time, we're actually not separate. We're all interrelated. And even on a molecular level, and the whole universe is interpenetrating and affecting each other itself. And so the idea in Tibetan Buddhism is that we really, again, learn to love ourselves and bring loving kindness and compassion to ourselves and to everybody else. And we learn to really see that on an essential level, we're all equal. And now some of us, or all of us at certain times, make bad decisions or do things that are harmful or unskillful. And, you know, we try to work on that in ourselves. But the core is to come into really having this kind of care and kindness for all sentient beings. So sentient means all beings with consciousness. So that is used in Buddhism to include animals as well, the love and care of animals. And also, you know, in Buddhism, even over 1,500 years ago, they were talking about other solar systems and galaxies. So there's might be other beings out there too. So this is the meditation, and what the listener is asking about, I think was in terms of, I'm not sure, a refuge or dedication practice. But yes, these, what she's talking about, what I wrote about, is in the steps in this book and getting us to gradually feel that sense of opening toward ourselves and toward others. And ironically, the hardest thing for Western people, mostly in America and Europe and Australia, that I've found in teaching this is people have an easier time having compassion for loved ones and friends than they do for themselves. It's very, very hard for many of us to actually feel kindness toward ourselves. We're always berating ourselves, or, you know, you should have done this better. Next time you should do that. Why did you do this? And this is not actually helpful. It's like trying to raise a child by yelling at them. That's not the way the child grows up healthy and happy. And it's not the way the child actually changes into being a happy, you know, productive person. And so we shouldn't treat ourselves like that. You know, we should be more kind with ourselves. And so not should, but of course, you know, this is our opportunity for growth and transformation. So I talk about that a lot in the book, that it starts at home inside of ourselves, this kindness, and then moves outward from there, and step by step in learning, you know, to really open our heart more. And Buddhism postulates that who we truly are is the union of love and wisdom. And it's our job on the spiritual path to uncover that fully and completely,
that we already are magnificent beings. In a Christian context, we would say we're made in the likeness of God already. We need to be able to uncover what's in the way of that and fully come into experiencing that.
And that was one of the things that I thought was one of the many things that was so beautiful in the book is that you talk a little bit about, you know, about self-love and how important a part that it plays in our life. And I think that's another issue that we have is that, you know, we have people that are being constantly told, you know, negative things. And then once we start doing it in our own head, we're doing more damage to ourselves. So I'm so glad that you brought that up, because at a time in which we're talking about, you know, all of these things that we want to do for everyone else, if we don't fix it within ourselves, I think it's going to make it more difficult for us to provide the help and support for anybody else out there.
Absolutely, yes. And it has to do with, you know, ultimately bringing kindness and compassion to our own suffering and allowing that to soften and transform. So, of course, this is a whole process that I talk about in the book. And then our capacity to truly be there for others is really enhanced and enlarged.
So, Mercedes, how would you tie this in as far as the parenting, where the same issue is there, that if we're not showing self-love, in front of our children, that we're having a similar problem with dealing with them as we would with anybody else or ourselves?
Yeah, I was listening to this piece and I was really contemplating the idea that I work with, which is I really work with the parent and their development of their parenting identity. And a lot of parents come into this role and don't understand how important the skill of self-love is to their parenting identity. A lot of people come into this role thinking, I'm going to do better than my parents, or I'm going to try to be like my parents if my parents were good, or I really, you know, was okay with their parenting. But they forget this piece of actually loving themselves and who they currently are and how they're currently contributing to their family and to their child's development. And so I think it's so important what you're teaching, because we really have to figure out that self-love is the first step to healing and is the first step to helping anybody else. And I think that says so much to what it means to develop your parenting identity. If you don't love yourself, if you don't have compassion for yourself, it's going to be so difficult to give that same love, that same compassion, that same empathy to your child, who is a developing human as well. So I am completely on board with everything that you just shared.
Yeah, wonderful. And, you know, it's just as you're saying that, I'm just thinking it's so amazing that this meditation I'm teaching in the book is over 1,000 years old, and they were giving this advice way back then, you know.
As sad as this may sound, I think that the reason that it hasn't, you know, it hasn't stayed and become so much a part of the our overall culture is nobody's figured out how to monetize it. Because if somebody monetized it, then they would have it on every TV screen and it would be everywhere. But these things, unless somehow a big corporation somehow monetizes it, they don't seem to find a way to keep it in the public's in the forefront of their thought.
That's both the good news and the bad news.
Exactly.
It's the bad news in the sense of, yeah, we don't want everything monetized. But on the other hand, the true values and the true human heart cannot be monetized. And that's the good news.
Right. Exactly. When Mercedes was mentioning a little bit in regards to the parenting side of this, and I know that you had mentioned earlier, and you also share it in your book, that you taught a 3-year-old how to do this meditation. Tell us more, number one, about that and how we got somebody that young to be able to understand and to be able to meditate. But also, I think there's an avenue here where I think some parents are a little closed off. You know, they've sort of closed off certain receptors in being able to learn something new. But how can we, if we can get some of this to the children, allow the parents to see that and have it sort of work in reverse, where the parents are going to be able to understand and get more involved when they see the benefits that it's bringing to their own children?
That's really interesting, yes. Well, I think a lot of times, again, our concepts, our ideas, our fixated ideas about things, you know, make things harder to learn for us as adults sometimes, where a child is just open and you say to them, oh, imagine a light in your heart that's inseparable or that is the same with God or with Jesus or with the Buddha. They're like, oh, okay. And they just like imagine this heart, light in their heart that is, you know, feels like Jesus in their heart or Buddha in their heart, and they can just do it. You know, it's like they kind of get out of the way. So in this meditation with the three-year-old, that's what I did. And again, this goes back to what we were just talking about before this, which is if you're raising a child and you have honor and respect for yourself as a human being and kindness to yourself, and then you hold your child in the honor and respect of them as a unique individual, and see, and we can see the light, so to speak, in our own child, the divine light, we could call it, in our own child, in our own selves. When we can hold ourselves with honor and respect, we can see the divine light or the divine or awake presence in ourselves and in people around us and eventually in everyone. So the little girl, I said, you know, imagine, because she knew she was being raised in a Buddhist family, that the Buddha is in your heart and you imagine him as this light in your heart, or a Vajra, the symbol that's used traditionally, which there's a drawing of in the book, and that symbolizes our essential pure being that's indestructible and unharmable. So you imagine that, or like from a Christian or different religions, you can work it in a way that is appropriate. So that light, I said, imagine this light in your heart that's your own basic goodness and all the wisdom and love of the Buddhas. And then, because she was upset about two things in particular, and she was suffering over it, and that's why she came to me. And one was seeing other children like be mean to each other, especially on the playground at nursery school and stuff, or taunt each other and that kind of thing. And then the other was when she saw dead animals on the road and she felt really bad for them, you know, that were killed by a car. So I said, okay, when you're in that situation right there and you're feeling that suffering of that other child or that dead animal, just breathe in that suffering and it touches that light in your heart that's all powerful, and that instantly sends light out and transforms that suffering into love, into compassion. And then you imagine that is white light that goes into the person you're concerned about, or the animal you're concerned about, or the, you know, group of people, and just fills them with light, brings love into them, brings healing energy into them. And then you just see them and imagine them becoming filled with this light of love and compassion and being at peace and being happy, being healed. So in that way, she could just a moment on the playground, just breathe the suffering into her heart. The light transforms it and sends out healing energy and love as white light back into the other child. So that's the way it works. This is the heart of the meditation of transforming suffering into love and joy. And so she was able to do that. She came back, you know, again, children, they kind of get themselves out of the way. They don't have so many fixated ideas, so they could just do it, you know. And she came back 6-8 weeks later and said that she felt much better. She really liked doing that, and it really helped her in the moment. You know, and I think what helps in the moment in this is it gets us in touch with our own power to choose and our own love and our own power to choose love and to bring that to situations. And it also really helps us get in touch with our own basic goodness, which is actually inseparable, our own true basic goodness that each and every one of us has at the core of who we are. That is actually not separate, in my view and experience, from the Buddhas, from Jesus, from God, from, you know, what is held to be awake or divine, inspired in others.
Yeah, Lama Paul, then I just wanted to first, I want to thank you so much. I can't believe it. Time has just flown by. In fact, I would love to have you back because I think we could do another hour easily. And Mercedes, thank you as well. There is a question also that came in from another listener that I want to ask real quick. And this one is, it says, I'm looking forward to reading your book, which I just purchased on Kindle. My question is, are you going to put the book on Audible, or is this meditation on any form of audio at any point? And that's from Brandon in Texas.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I'm not sure about the Audible. We'll see what happens with that. The publisher has to do that. But I am going to record the meditation and put it up on my website. And I'm sorry, I've been really, really busy. I haven't been able to do that yet. But I will plan to do that in the next few months and get that up. So check back with LamaPaulden.org, and even better, sign up on my mailing list on my website, and then you'll know when these things are there and they'll be available for free download.
That's great. And for anybody out there, if you're driving and you weren't able to write that down, we will have all of that information also on the Answers for the Family site. Or if you can write it down, it is LamaPaulden.org. First, Lama Paul, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for shining a light on the things that really are important, on kindness, on love, on compassion, on wisdom. Please keep it up and let me know, first, if you have another book coming out or maybe when you release the audio version so that people can go on. Maybe we can link it up and then have people listen to it during the show. I'd love to have you back and just really want to honor you for everything that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And I feel the same for your work and Mercedes' work, and would love to be with you another time. I've really enjoyed our discussion today.
That would be great. And Mercedes, thank you for taking the time to come on. And again, for everybody out there, go ahead and pull up the Diversity in Parenting Conference. You can also go to shameproofparenting.com and reach Mercedes to gain more information on how you can bring more happiness and peace to your family. So, Mercedes, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, and for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we will be joined by Carrie O'Driscoll to discuss One Teenager at a Time, Developing Self-Awareness and Critical Thinking in Adolescence. And please visit our archives of past interviews at AnswersForTheFamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or our newest platform, iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people. And the next time that you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. And for everybody, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.